Every time I go in, I take a look, and the LG, for whatever reason, consistently, every time I go in there, looks better than the other brands. So I don't know if they're, how are you going to say, CRT? If their PMP display is better than the competition, for what?
Okay, I've got a slightly more general question to be added on to Rich's question, and that is, are we at the status now, if I go to a medium good store, Eric, where almost all of the digital televisions are quite good and the difference is minor? Or do you think that there are huge differences in performance that we amateurs, who of course are discriminating watchers, who are looking for the highest possible resolution on the screen, I'm joking a little bit here, but have we got to the point in the technology where the difference is minor, or do you think we have to be awful careful because the difference is quite large? KE2EJ, K2LIW.
You know, I'm spoiled rotten. I've got to say that I've got a 36-inch studio monitor. You ever seen that big monitor? I have one of those at home. That's a nice piece of glass. The stupid thing weighs over 200 pounds. It's better than anything you can buy out there. K2LIW, K2EJ.
Very fine, Eric. But you said one thing that maybe didn't come through that I heard on the input, which amazes me a little bit. One of the sources of information you were mentioning actually was telling the fib. Was it one of the television magazines, one of these magazines that's doing surveys, or was it Consumers Report? The fib you were mentioning, what again was that source of fib? Was that something that was unique, or is there quite a bit of fibbing going on because of the competition between brands? Back to you, Eric.
Who's that, Echo Alpha, N2ZEA?
N2ZEA, I think it was. Start off with your name, sir, and then your question. N2ZEA, I think it was. K2LAW, my name is Dick.
Thank you, Dick. My name is Glenn, November 2Z, Echo Alpha, and I have a question on a different subject. So I'll let you guys finish this one, and then I'll ask.
Okay, Glenn. Is there anything else you think we should know, Eric, before we leave the subject? And I think we've got to come back to it because lots of us are going to be going out and buying more sets as Christmas approaches and as January approaches. So we're going to be bugging you a little bit, and I hope it doesn't become too annoying. Okay, those displays you said that look really, really good, were they TFT or were they plasma? In the beginning, plasma had all kinds of storage problems and minor resolution problems, and you had to put it into a dark room. So the display, other than your CRT monitor that you really love, what's the one that you like the most? I'm hearing you on the input, so don't worry.
So that technology has matured quite a lot. So the one that I'm talking about is not a TFT, it's not an LCD, it's not a plasma.
They're getting 10 to 20,000 hours out of the plasma. In the beginning, plasmas were quite dim, and now they're really the brightest and the best, because the hours are getting up there, he likes them a lot. The other kinds of displays, the LCDs, TFTs, and whatever, you mentioned something called SMT. You may have to give me a couple more words on that, but maybe we shouldn't do it tonight. Maybe we'll move on to the next subject. Well, we're going to revisit this, because I can tell a lot of us are going to be studying which television to buy over the next few months, because the big day, February 17th, is coming. Let's see what Glenn's got to say. N2ZEA, go right ahead with your question, Glenn. K2LIW in the TechNet.
Question about a Wi-Fi antenna. I was looking on a website, and they actually have some beam antennas for Wi-Fi. And they have kind of a nice narrow beam width and a reasonable gain. I was wondering what kind of success you think I might get, and how far from my house I might be able to pick up somebody else's router.
Well, there's a huge number of variables in there. What kind of antenna is on the router? How far away? Between, like in between. Wi-Fi, an awful lot of the Wi-Fi that you're probably interested in is on 2.4 gigahertz. I can tell you that trees, particularly when the leaves are wet and the leaves are on the tree, 2.4 gigs gets absorbed real fast. And I know something about the power that these hubs are likely to run. So let's go the other way around. Are you looking to get reception from a block away, a mile away, or 5 miles away? Roughly what kind of range are you looking for, Glenn? Go ahead.
I'm hoping for a block or two. I see that there's a couple signals out there, a couple routers. When you drive around the neighborhood on a little iPod, you get maybe like one bar, just an acknowledgement that it's there. But if it's set up with a nice antenna on a rotor, I was hoping, am I likely to get something like that I should communicate with?
I think the answer is definitely yes. A block away, easy. See, there are people who, with Wi-Fi-like systems, have made experiments out to 20 and 30 miles. But in some cases, that was from a seashore to an island out in the sea, these kind of things, as an experiment. No, a block is easy. By way of you having a high enough gain antenna, and certainly now the manufacturer is telling you the truth as to the real antenna gain and seeing with its efficiency, assuming you've got a good low noise amplifier on your receiver front end, a reasonably low loss piece of feed line between the two, assuming your antenna is at a high enough altitude to clear some of the local terrain, and it's on a rotator, I think you, depending on what neighborhood you live in, there could be a neighborhood you live in where the nearest guy with a router happens to be 4 miles away. Then again, there could be five guys within a block of you. There's a lot of variables involved, but it's a fun experiment. Doesn't take huge investment for a guy like, but with your resources, Glenn, I would go for it. I would go and buy it. Worst comes to worst, it'll be a good excuse. You can tell the wife, gee, I really need 75 feet of Rhone 25 in the backyard, not only for my ham radio purposes, but for, because I have lots of communication with the local routers. You see where I'm going here, Glenn. But if I was in your shoes, I would go for it. N2ZEA, K2LIW.
Hey, that's been a lot of fun. Any recommendations as to what network card I might use, the particular brand you like, or maybe the manufacturer of antennas that are you particularly fond of?
Yeah, when you ask me that question, you're in trouble. I'm fairly computer non-literate. I claim to be an RF person who understands the design of antennas, but when it comes to brand names, model numbers, I'm pretty poor. I hope either tonight or on future nights when we re-ask the question, somebody on frequency will give you some suggestions as to which brand name of cards and which brand name of antennas you should be doing for this couple of block reception of Wi-Fi signals. Anybody with any information on that subject, please give us your call letters right now, K2LIW and the TechNet listener.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was a little bit afraid of that, Glenn. We may not have anyone tonight with that particular information, but hopefully in future nights we will. I know that your usual, I can't even think of the brand names, Circuit City, they probably are going, but you know what I mean. Circuit City-like stores should have the hardware you're looking for without huge prices. I'd like to believe the difference between the brand names is relatively small. I mean, it would be kind of foolish for somebody to design one and sell it with a 20 decibel noise figure front end as opposed to a 1 dB noise figure front end. And even if they did, adding a preamp to the front end would help it. So that even if at worst you do get one that's not quite as sensitive as you like, because you're not the, I'm about to say not transmitting. That's not true. To do the handshake, obviously you've got to be transmitting. Okay, so we need a bidirectional amplifier here. We need an amplifier that in the transmit mode passes the signal through, and in the receive mode it does you the boosting. It makes life a little bit more difficult. As you can tell, I haven't got those answers, but you've got a darn good question. I recommend you ask it more times with us in future weeks. There's also a computer net that meets on this repeater, and if you go to the LimeOff website, you'll find out that the hour and day that the computer net meets. And maybe someone will tell me right now what's the hour and day that the computer net meets. K2LIW, listen. Go ahead, Glenn.
Good evening, Dick. Just a real quick question. I mean, a quick answer about Wi-Fi antennas.
Just even if you do a search on Google and look up Wi-Fi antennas, and they have plenty of the B&G series routers, wireless routers, where you can get 10 to 18 dB gain in the aggregate that you can put up on the roof. And the wires that I've used to attach to coax is RG6U. The only problem that you have with the RG6U is trying to get connectors from the F-type connector to SMA. But there are plenty of adapters around this to do that, and generally you have to get a good response. And also, if the cable gets longer than 50 feet, it's kind of easy for it. So try to keep the straight length of the coax and try to keep it under 50 feet with the RG6U.
WB2IKK. Not up to your name, sir, and your information.
Okay. Name is George, calling Whiskey Bravo 2, India, Kilowatt Tango, and just some notes on the Wi-Fi antennas. There's a number of companies, Cisco comes to mind, TESCO, T-E-S-S-C-O, if you're in Baltimore. They have a huge variety of Wi-Fi antennas, up to and including 4-foot-long collinears, which sort of look like a whip antenna, have close to 20 dB of gain directionally in the horizontal plane, which is compressed audible signal. Excellent coverage. If you really want to go for coverage, though, you may be better off using 802.11n and using MIMO technology that will actually take more than one RF path to combine them. The fascinating technology. And will require an absolute latest and greatest access point. The good news is it's backwards compatible with earlier revisions of GEC technology.
I believe that MSJ is now selling a multiple element Wi-Fi antenna to 2.4 gig and 2 hours of. Very fine, Frank. Good information. Hey, Glenn, that 18 dB Yagi antenna. Have you seen a picture of it? Roughly, what does it look like? If it's 18 dB over ISO, it's a significant antenna. If it's 18 dB over dipole, which of course I doubt, it's a breakthrough antenna. What does that thing look like, Glenn? Go ahead.
Looks like a fiberglass cone that's about 2-3, maybe 4 feet long, and I think about 4 inches or so thick, completely sealed, and just about like that.
Okay, that was Glenn number two. Glenn number one, have you seen that 18 dB antenna? What does it look like to you?
A very similar description. It has the cone shape down the center with like Yagi elements coming out of the middle, and it is 18 dB over isotropic, not dB, it's not dB. And it has like a conical shape on the outside with nest nests in the center. What I got to do is wait till it's light outside. I'll take a picture of it and shoot it to you in an email. But yeah, it looks like a Yagi inside of a conic shaped cone that's weather sealed, and it has the SMA connectors coming up at the back end of the tail.
Okay, I can tell. KC2QIQ, you've used one. You like it. What kind of DX have you gotten with it? Do you have it on a rotator? Tell me a little bit about how you have used it, and what you liked and what you didn't like about it. Glenn number two, KC2QIQ, KQLIW.
Well, interestingly enough, the reason I purchased it was because initially I didn't have security on my router, and I had noticed that kind of load. A lot of people were using my router. But before I locked it out, I was kind of interested in where those signals were coming from. So when I put my router up this time, I put it up there with a beam and kind of went rotated around and take a peek at where these signals were coming from and where all this traffic was located. And it kind of like followed its line of sight within a few houses, in which other house had some kind of an antenna pointing in my direction, and I kind of found it and it put security on my router. That could be the case too, right there.
Okay, now, in theory, I am guessing at first this is a victimless crime. However, if other people are using your router, I guess there is the possibility there of mischief and various kinds of mischief. Is that what you were concerned about, Glenn? Or were you concerned that if he makes too heavy use of it, it's going to be cutting down your your upload and download rate. What were you most concerned about, Glenn? Go ahead.
My main concern is really just my availability of doing downloads and being able to do things myself. And when it won't send up my network, it's really going slow. I couldn't believe how much traffic was on it. I'm kind of really scared if people are actually surfing the internet on like their Wi-Fi connection. I could really care less. Because I had security on the other end of my machine with firewalls and other things. They couldn't get into my server. But I was really upset with the fact that when I come home at night, I'm paying for Fios service. And I was starting to slow down for a connection that almost looked like a dial-up. Heck of a user.
WB to IKK, son. IKK, pick you up in a second. Glenn, roughly what's the maximum number of people who in the worst situation were using your system? Were there five guys in the neighborhood or using your system? Go ahead.
I don't know exactly, I would say, how many. I think the other users might have been just very lightweight users. Much of an issue. But there was one user, a neighbor with about four houses away, that actually had a deck kind of like pointed right at my house. And again, I didn't even have an external antenna. I just had the router set up on the second story, but it was on top of the television set just on the other side of the room where so I can walk around with my laptop. And I could see his antenna pointed right here. When I put the deck down in his direction, when I was coming away, I could actually almost disconnected. So I knew immediately that's where it was coming from. But apparently, it was really that one user who was really slowing it down. And I don't know whether he's trying to run some kind of a website or something off of my connection. That could have used it.
Maybe he was downloading all these pretty girl pictures, high-resolution pretty girl pictures. Is there a way, if you're smart enough, Glenn, and I'm going to be asking this to IKT in a second, if you're smart enough, is there a way that as he communicates, you could look at the bitstream and figure out what his identification is? Go ahead.
I'm sure that there is, but I'm not aware of it right now, of exactly how to do it. Really what was happening was I was doing it much simpler than that, because mainly just looking at my download, my connection to the internet. And of course, once he was connected, you could see the load just really dropped. And, there again, I kind of figured out where it was. But as far as the IDing it, yeah, there are ways that you can definitely, there's software that you can get both for your router and on your PC. You can monitor that polling. And you can actually find his connection IP, what channel he's connected to on your router, and, what actually websites are connected to it. Because you can actually, and another way to do it is just to set up a simple server. You can connect with your router in a server loop. So that basically, you have to go through your machine and then you can do all of this traffic back over to the system to your
right. And that could be kind of fun. I have the impression, George, that you're in the business or have worked with us quite a bit. Tell us anything you can about it, and it'll be fun because I know very little, and possibly there's a few other people that are equally ignorant listening. WB2IKT, K2LIW. My name is Dick.
Sure, okay. I'm glad you turned on the security on your router, Glenn. That's a very critical item. Some people who were spamming massive volumes of email have been out there hijacking other users' Wi-Fi for the reason that they didn't want to get caught with their addresses and so on being spammed. And Dick, you were right on target when you talked about the quote, pretty girl pictures. That's a known reason to hijack somebody else's Wi-Fi. That's a good reason to have security around, but discourage people from doing that. Because in case somebody starts tracing it, because it's the really awful or the illegal kind of so-called pretty pictures, you don't want the authorities after you, saying that you didn't put security on your Wi-Fi. Also, the industry is, the industry changes very quickly. It's in the process now of changing from DT to N. N includes a technology called MIMO, which I think a lot of us ham operators want to be more aware of, which it actually takes advantage of multi-cam. What happens is it's capable of putting a somewhat different signal on each of the paths across improving the throughput by combining the all the different paths to one single signal. So it's kind of a fascinating aspect. of it, the mass is probably beyond this group at this point, though. But reading about NATO 2.11.10, and by the way, draft format, in front of the IEEE, the draft should be complete next year sometime.
And what is the major difference for N, I presume that's N for Nancy, over the previous protocol, George? What will it have? MIMO is certainly a big one, multiple input, multiple output. So therefore, you could, in theory, be receiving with multiple antennas, and the adaptability of your equalization network in your receiving system would then choose the right coupling coefficient of all the right taps of the equivalent of a shift register, so that all of the multicam signals are put together in the correct time domain with the right antenna pattern, and therefore you get the highest possible signal-to-noise ratio. I presume this is the major motivation of the MIMO. So I have the impression that the November protocol is MIMO capable, and I'll bet you there are other high-speed and data correction and forward error correction, whatever techniques involved in it. Pure guess on my part. Back to you, George. IKT, KQRIW.
Sure, KQRIW, I think that makes sense. Absolutely right. The biggest advantage of the MIMO technology in the 802.11n is actually the data rate. As we know, the further you get away from the access point, the lower the data rate. The systems are half duplex. And the MIMO technology offers data rates effectively of up to several hundred megabits per second. The theoretical limit is 600 megabits per second. In all honesty, that's kind of like, you know, building a isotropic antenna. It really isn't ever going to be any such thing. But people out in the field are actually getting somewhere in the area of 180 megabits per second.
Very nice, and good to know. MIMO, in my opinion, has had, from my point of view, I worked for a particular client company that invested a couple of man years into MIMO. Maybe they didn't do it right. It seemed to have a false start two or three years ago. I think you're saying by the successes you're describing of the bit rate, it looks like some of the early bugs have been ironed out, and a person setting up MIMO typically sets up how many individual antennas of what kind? I guess they're quasi-isotropic antennas.
Although the consumer point is 2x2, I see those a lot. Cisco has an access point out there, to my knowledge, which is kind of the reference standard in the industry, and it's a 2x3 antenna for a Cisco 1250 access point. And really, again, speed, secondarily distance, the two of them as a product. So as you go further away, you get you can get more distance and less speed. If you get closer, you can get more speed.
Very nice. When it comes to the receiving hardware itself, you have reason to believe that almost any brand that I'm likely to buy has a reasonable noise figure of the front end. That is to say, not much improvement on reception could take place if I put a low noise gas fed 2 gig preamplifier or 5 gig preamplifier in front of it. However, if I did put a preamplifier in front of it, I'd have to carefully choose one which allows a throughput in the transmit mode to that antenna. You might clear up some of my misunderstanding in that area. WB2TFKT. Here we go. IKT, KQLIW, Scott of Georgia.
Yeah. Because of where the equipment is located, basically, gas fed or your very low noise preamp, honestly, if you reduce the noise figure from, you know, 1.5 or 2 dB down to some fraction of a dB, it just won't buy you that increased distance in terms of reception, and it's probably
okay, if I understand correctly, then
area, there is a parallel band to these things, which is just on a slightly different channel, requires a light, And there you see all kinds of power amplifiers, linear amplifiers, and so on, which go about boosting the power. Apparently the industry doesn't think that low noise preamps are far good. There aren't a lot of commercial products out here.
Okay, so I think you're saying most of the hardware I'm likely to buy has a barefoot noise figure of around 1.5 dB. Don't worry about it. I'm not going to make much improvement on that. A preamplifier that I might add that has a better noise figure, I still got to worry about being able to transmit back through it in the other direction. I think transmitters are not allowed to run more than 1 watt, but I'll bet you there are people who are finding a way of boxing those rules. Am I close to right on that one, George?
In my opinion, Wi-Fi phenomena, the 802.11, unlike spectrum access points, is the 2000 version of the CB craze from the 1970s. So probably wouldn't say what you think of it.
Yep, I understand. Just like I've heard of some experiments where people have gone very long distances over the sea just as an experiment. I wouldn't be a bit surprised to find that some people are running, as an experiment, hopefully very briefly, a 100-watt amplifier. Is that true?
I don't know about the power amplifier side, but I know that people are playing with exorbitant antennas. One of the favorite antennas by people who experiment with them is the so-called Pringle scan antenna. So if you do a Google on Pringle antenna, you get a astounding number of hits on the number of people that decided to, you know, have their chips to meet them too. Resistance directed Wi-Fi, to my knowledge, is 318 kilometers, and then we've seen sweeps up between mountaintops. At the DEFCON convention,
started telling us about what happened at the DevCon convention, and then we had a disconnect after that. Could you possibly repeat that, George?
Okay, sorry about that. Basically they play with gargantuan antennas as opposed to high power amplifiers, and the distance record is a few hundred miles over there. The world distance, to my knowledge, is 318 kilometers from the southern sweep to the mountain.
And was that done with dish-like antennas on each end, a 3 or 4 foot diameter dish? And by the way, the Pringle can antenna, there's some controversy there. If you're using a Pringle can antenna at 5 gigs, yes, you've got an antenna. At 2 gigs, the diameter of a Pringle can is a round piece of waveguide that I think is beyond cutoff. So when people think they were getting huge gains out of a Pringle antenna, they were really getting leakage from the launching structure as the antenna, and they weren't getting quite the gain they thought they were getting. That's a strong belief on my part. Back to you, George.
Your belief is well-founded. People who were playing further with antennas discovered that Maxwell House Corpus scans had a much better gain and a much better signal pattern than the Pringle can. The Pringle can actually was workable and people played with it. The antennas that were the distance winners, though, were basically gargantuan corner reflectors. They kind of like put them on what I would call a sled. They would slide them, hold them down with sandbags, and they were not dishes, surprisingly enough. They were corner reflector type antennas.
Yeah, a corner reflector antenna, when you only go a couple of wavelengths on the bat wing, so to speak, works pretty well. But beyond that, a hell of a lot of the surface is not aiding in the requirement. It's not giving you a co-phase signal in the right direction. Let's see now. 2.4 gigs is around a 4.5-inch wavelength. 4.5 inches per wavelength. 10 inches is 4 wavelengths. By the time you get 3 or 4 feet in diameter of dish, if it's not parabolic, you're wasting an awful lot of potential as I see it. I'm kind of amazed that they didn't use big parabolic dishes. Sounds like a fun area. You've been experimenting with roughly how long, George? KQLIW?
essentially playing with native 2.11 technology on it, sort of an enterprise version that came out. So as a ham operator, you know, I have a small access point here. I have security on it. I have some small collinear antennas that are advertised at 6 dB, which I suspect is 6 dBi as opposed to 8 dB. And they're, you know, about a foot long, and they seem to do the job. The signal goes out well around the house, and I can run my laptop on my deck in the summertime when it's nice out and get the good signal there.
I think you're saying also, if you had a reasonably good antenna and you scanned your neighborhood in pixels, what's your guess as to how many access points you might find, George? Go ahead.
Well, I actually do that. I have an access point that will do that, and basically it's pretty quiet. Every once in a while, one of my neighbor's access points will pop up and be there, but apparently, I guess I live in an area where there's not a lot of Wi-Fi activity, and so I don't really get a lot of those things. Every once in a while, I see somebody signal and go away.
Do you believe their signal is coming and going because they're turning their computer and the rest of the system on and off at that time, and they leave it off when they're not using it? Or what other explanation would there be for why it is available sometimes and not available sometimes?
I can't think of anything that would be systematic that would let me believe that it's anything other than they're turning it on and off occasionally. I'm probably not as diligent about watching what my neighbors are doing as I ought to be, but as long as I have the security enabled, which I do on my own Wi-Fi, I feel pretty reasonably happy. And like I said, I noticed some of my neighbors have that. I live next door to an elementary school, and apparently they don't have a Wi-Fi set up within the school because you know, when I scan it for that purpose, it's just blank. Apparently the school districts aren't rushing to embrace that as quickly as I would have thought.
I'd be curious to know what kind of security he's running and to where it goes.
Good question, Frank. And so when George comes back, he's going to tell us about the security he's running, how secure does he think it is. I'm also going to ask the question of what's really going on here. I am guessing the average person has antennas within his abode giving him Wi-Fi coverage, that the plug-in PCMCIA card on his laptop computer will allow him to walk anywhere around his house or property. He can go out to the picnic table in the backyard and be Wi-Fi connected, is what I'm guessing is going on. And so therefore, because it's wireless and has some kind of range within your property, obviously for a person well-equipped, it has range beyond your property. So therefore, I'm guessing that's the reason it exists like that. And if I had the proper security system, and which security system should I be using, how secure am I? Am I literally locking out everybody except my particular laptop? That is E2IKT, K2LIW?
Yeah, okay. There's three commercial security areas available. One is called WPP, which stands for Wired Equivalent Privacy. Which has been pretty thoroughly cracked. And people who can receive signals encoded with WEP can usually crack them in a few minutes. All you need is a few dozen packets, and you can run a relatively fast method of cracking the key. The problem with WEP is that the initialization vector isn't adequately protected, and you only have 24 bits worth of bit space to do the detection. The next set of encryption technology is called WPA, and that one is crackable, but you need a dictionary attack, so it takes a lot longer. Dictionary attack is just basically brute-forcing all possible passwords. And then the third way that comes to equipment today is called WPA2, and it actually uses the Ridgedale encryption algorithm, which was set up by the U.S. government, and that one is considered to be very reasonably secure, and I would recommend the WPA2 security for anybody that's curious about it.
And for me to establish that, roughly how many dollars do I have to invest, George?
And for the most part, it's built into most people's Wi-Fi access points, 2 by the day. wasn't available in the older one. It is available in the newer one, and you can use WPA2 with a pre-shared key for home use. For corporate use, you probably go about it with a certificate and an 802.1x system using multi-factor authentication. And honestly, that's probably beyond what most people at home would do.
Sounds good. Now, if that school that's near you was really progressive, I think you're saying they should be Wi-Fi equipped so that students walking around with laptops have wireless internet connection. I can see some reasonably good advantages of doing that, particularly in study halls. They could be doing online research without worrying about wires. Are there schools on Long Island that are so equipped, to your knowledge, George?
Yes. In fact, I would think the majority of school districts on Long Island are so equipped. In my case, I live next door to an elementary school, and I just don't hear any signals coming out of it. I'm not aware of the kindergartners, fifth graders walking around with laptops. Haven't seen that, so I don't think it would be the students, but I think the teachers would probably find it convenient, and, you know, I'm just not aware of that either. I don't think the Hicksville School District is as progressive as some of the other ones. On the other hand, down the block from me is a Catholic school, the Holy Trinity High School, and that is wirelessly equipped, although it's just out of range of me, because it's 1,200 feet away from the house. So I don't pick up their signals, but they have a Wi-Fi in there that covers the common areas of the school.
If you had enough gain and enough altitude of your antenna, you could be picking them up too, George.
That's true. Unfortunately, my kids went there, and when they were going there, they didn't have that system. But the system got installed after they graduated, so I don't have to really need to snoop on what the school was doing anymore.
Okay, I'm not saying you need to do it for snooping. I guess as a wireless enthusiast, it'd be nice to see, you know, what's in the neighborhood and how far away, how strong are the signals, and so on. So as you said earlier, it's a little bit like the citizen band world way back in the, I guess, late 60s, early 70s. Anyone with any further questions? Looks like George is quite a fountain of information here. He's been doing quite a bit of work with this. Anyone else with any further questions or comments? Give me your call letters right now. KQRIW in the TechNet. Okay, awful glad you came along, George. Hope you'll sign in more frequently. Mel, you've probably gotten some mail, and maybe we should start tapping into it so we don't have unhappy people out there. H-U-K-E-Y, K-Q-R-I-W.
Yeah, I was trying to say something to me too early.
Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, let's see a conversation before that about ETV restriction. Do you yourself recommend any particular kind of outside television antenna that's going to have enough gain to be able to pick up that stuff adequately from out where we live, near the similar distance from the city that I am, maybe a little further west, but not by too much?
Now, you're on the South Shore, and I guess with a good telescope, you can directly see the Empire State Building. I'm on high land in Huntington, and I can see the Empire State Building. In fact, I enjoy looking at it when I climb my tower. You're about to ask me, who makes a real good television aerial with lots of gain? I don't know. Haven't bought one in a long time.
Vanguard.
Vanguard? Okay, Vanguard makes a good one.
Roughly how much? Weingard, W-I-N-E.
Okay, Weingard. How big? How many dollars? Give us a couple words.
I really don't know at this time, but I do know they still manufacture them, and as a matter of fact, they're manufacturing the digital converter boxes, and they're probably the only manufacturer so far that has one not only with an analog pass-through, but can be battery-operated, so that if you lose your power at home, obviously, if your TV can be powered by battery, you want your digital converter box to be powered as well.
Very fine. I think it's Frank I'm talking to. Roughly how many dollars is that puppy? How long have you owned it, Frank?
Actually, I don't. I have my coupons, and
I was looking for a manufacturer selling it out here, something like Best Buy or one of those others. But at the present time, it's only available on the internet. There are only one or two companies that sell it. But basically, I think it's around $59, and of course, you get $40 back from your coupon. So for $20, it's not a bad deal.
Sounds awfully good. I presume WineGuard has a website that's going to tell me much of the information I want to know and shows me a picture of it?
Yes, it does, Dick. And I'm hoping some of the other companies will come up with... other companies do have, some of them have the analog pass-through feature. So far, this WineGuard is the only set that will allow you to attach either their own battery pack or connect it to a, I believe it's either a 9 or a 12-volt battery.
How much current does it draw? Do you think it's going to run a good number of hours on a 9-volt battery?
I don't remember the exact specs, Dick, but I think it will run a good day or two. You know, the first 24 hours or so is the most important time right after a disaster. So, and I believe it's a type of battery pack that can be, has replaceable batteries. So if you have a good supply of AA's or C's, whatever it uses, you should be in business for at least a week.
About that. Sounds like fun.
Gee, look, Dick, I have a couple other suggestions about security on Wi-Fi, if you're interested.
Go right ahead, Frank.
Okay, my one suggestion that comes to mind for those people who have bought either routers or access points, the first thing you should do is get out that CD, run the program, and take care of the security features, just like was mentioned before, using WPA, WPA2. But in addition to that, change the default. As an example, the Linksys routers and access points, they broadcast the name of their router, Linksys. And if you allow that to be broadcast, anybody passing by or one of your neighbors will know that there's a Linksys router available. And of course, the password for the router is the same, the default. And I won't give it over the air because I don't want to cause problems. But anyone who has a Linksys router knows that password. So the first two suggestions is change the name of the ID that the router broadcasts, and more importantly, turn off the broadcast feature so that you don't send anything out. That can be done via software. The other thing is, let me drop it for a second. The other thing is that the routers and access points recognize your computer peripherals, your laptop and peripherals, by the IP addresses. But they can be configured to recognize them by their MAC addresses. Now, the MAC address is something you'll find on the label of just about every computer and every peripheral. It's in hex format. And most routers, if I'm not mistaken, allow you to list just those devices by MAC address. What that means is that anyone else gaining access to your router or access point won't be able to do anything with it because they don't have the right MAC address. So it's just a little bit of food for thought. Back to that N2R. So.
Okay, somebody with a comment. I'll be with you in a minute. Frank, from what you're saying, I have the impression that these machines all come with a identical, what's the word for them now? Protocol is not the right word. Address is not the right word. They all come with a standard setting that you have to change. I suspect there are naive people out there who don't know to change those settings they put it on the air, they think they're secure, and I think they are not. Is that sort of what you're saying, Frank? And does the instruction manual, the owner's manual, make that clear? Back to you, Frank.
That says it all, Dick, but you have to take the time to read the manual, or at least run the CD.
QIQ, recognized. Who is the other person who had a comment?
WBQIKT. And that was excellent advice that we just heard. I'll just make one exception to it, which is the MAC address thing, because MAC addresses are readily spoofed by hackers. So if somebody's actually trying to attack you, doing the MAC address filtering doesn't help very much. But if it's just somebody who's generally going to be hacking, and you have MAC address filtering, they'll move on to the next open IP.
Good to know. Go ahead, Glenn. QIQ.
Yeah, just a quick comment about accessing the administrative features of most routers. All the work I've ever done with routers, the only way that I've ever been able to gain access to my own routers is I have to be on a Cat 5 cable into the back of the router. But you know, as far as I know, there's no way of accessing the administrative features with passwords or anything from the wireless port. As a matter of fact, every router I've ever seen, Linksys or otherwise, there again, now you have to be on the Cat 5 side. So in other words, if you're in the network, you know, now if you're at the, let's say, a router level, or you're in the wired network, and you have access to that wired connection, yes, you would be able to get a hold of the administrative code and start changing things, which is generally the capability that you'll have as the owner of the router. But I don't know of any way where somebody with a standard router could reconfigure a router from the wireless side of the connection. I could be wrong on that one, but there again, I'd be interested if somebody has some more information on that one, in case you should feel like to.
George or Frank, do you want to make comment on that?
What a hacker would be likely to do is to, using your access point, go to a machine that you have on your network, get into your machine, use your machine as a relay to get into the access point and your stuff.
Exactly. Go ahead, Joe.
Quite a few routers have remote administration capable if you turn it on, and you can access the router from the internet. Also, remote upgrades, you can have upgrades done remotely too. But the thing you're talking about with MAC address, a friend of mine has a wireless router, and he has all of his wireless application laptops set up so those MAC addresses are the only thing the router will look at, and he assigned all those without any problem at all. So if you try to go to the wireless network with a MAC address that's not on the list but in the wireless setup, it wouldn't even accept it. We need to see you.
Good to know. Anybody have any further questions or comments on this subject? Give me the call letters right now.
You got 2 hours, though.
Glenn and Frank in that order. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, my first question being, somebody went through that one pretty quick. They said that they would have to, in order to reconfigure the router now, somebody would have to get access to my network. Now, if I have a home network that's not connected to anything other than my own computers within my house, other than that and an AC wall outlet, the only connection to the outside world